Welcome to Addiction to Recovery. Our purpose and passion is to bring you not only the science of addiction,
but also the patient perspective and how the two relate. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Addiction to Recovery. My name is Josh Solem. I'm a certified peer recovery specialist. I'm also a person in long-term recovery. I am joined by Dr. Nye, the science guy. Oh my God. I'm kidding. It's Dr. Heather Bell. I say that because we were just talking about how much science-y stuff we're going to talk about today, because this is Alcohol 101 Part 2, and we do need to get through a lot of these scientific numbers, effects, things like that, just to give people a basic understanding of what alcohol is and what it does.
Yeah, and it's not meant to be like you're sitting in, you know, chemistry class. It's the science, but it's the day-to-day people who are drinking, what they should know,
right?
the basic metabolism, even.
Right.
That's important.
It's a consumer product that's regulated by the government. I mean, I get it. When I was shooting meth, I had no idea what I was putting in my body, you know, like, but I knew that ahead of time. I mean, it wasn't government regulated. This is stuff that, you know, that probably the general public, because it is so widely used, should know.
Right. Okay. So I want to just kind of start where we left off with, you know, we kind of left the primer of at-risk drinking levels, like how much is considered quote-unquote safe drinking. I mean, there's no safe amount of alcohol. Nobody needs alcohol to survive. Like, it's one of those things that you can live your whole life without it and you're not going to be deficient in anything.
Right.
So.
And people will say, well, the answer to long life was I drank one glass of red wine a day. That's bogus.
Yeah, there's studies, you know, out of Italy and all, you know, the Mediterranean diet and all those things. And we're definitely, I mean, we can get into those studies in one of our upcoming episodes when we're talking about the chronic long-term effects of alcohol. Maybe we'll pull some of those studies because this is a real thing. Like, a glass of wine is good for your heart health. Those have all started to be debunked.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, science.
And there are better things if you wanted to take care of your heart than to say, oh, I'm gonna add a glass of wine and that's gonna fix it.
Right, right. Okay. So just to kind of remind people, 5 or more drinks in a sitting is too much for men. 15 or more drinks in a week is too much for men. So 2 a day, roughly, for men. Anything higher than that, you are at risk drinking. And does that qualify you for an alcohol use disorder? No. I mean, it might, actually. You know, when you have an addiction or a use disorder, it's because it's starting to negatively impact your life in some way, shape, or form. Even as much as, like, your spouse or significant other being irritated by your drinking, I mean, that is starting to negatively impact your life. You know, you might not have any legal ramifications or job ramifications, but it's starting to negatively impact your life.
But I think I always go back to the, can you stop? If you can't stop, then you are addicted. So, I mean, I know that there's more scientific things that go through that and
right.
everything. But in my mind, that's the simple litmus test.
Right.
If you can't stop.
Behaviorally stop.
Right.
Right. And I didn't say this in the last episode, so I'm really glad you brought that up. Is if you are someone who is drinking 5 or more every single day, or, you know, sometimes I'll admit people who, yeah, they drink a case of beer every single day, or the people who drink like 24 over 2 days, or, you know, they go on a hard binge for 3 days and then they have 3 days off, and hard binge for 3 days, 3 days off, you please seek medical attention.
Yeah. And not to
quit drinking to say, well, I wanted to see, because Josh said, if I can't just quit for a month, please seek medical attention.
Right.
If you're drinking that much and you're really concerned about that, or a loved one's concerned and you think you want to tell your significant other or child or whomever, you need to quit drinking and give yourself a month challenge. Please seek medical attention to do that, because you can die of alcohol withdrawal.
Please, people, do not take scientific information from me and run with it. Don't take medical advice from me.
I'm just a regular recovering
addict.
Once you have detox, if you want to say, from the alcohol, then that's when you do your month challenge.
Because I don't know if we mentioned this either, but you can die.
I just
But explain that. Why?
Well, it can lead to seizures. It can lead to all sorts of other, you know, metabolic and physiological abnormalities. People who consume lots of alcohol, even if they might have the quote unquote beer gut or whatever, they don't look unhealthy. They are severely malnourished in a lot of cases, actually. And so it can throw off a lot of things, but a withdrawal seizure is not good. And that doesn't usually happen during hangover days 1 and 2. The withdrawal seizures happen by day 3 and 4 and 5. So you're already going to start feeling better, but then you could still have your seizure. I mean, you can have a seizure earlier too, but typically it's around more day that
but,
the day
but
3.
But to be clear, if somebody's drinking, you know, a couple of drinks a day every other day, they're not going to be at risk of this.
If you're having, you know, 1 or 2 drinks every couple days a week, you're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, in all likelihood now, science and medicine is never black and white. So if you're concerned, please talk to your doctor.
Seek medical help. Question on the 5 a day or 15 a day. I know this is
15
men
a week, 15
or 15 a week.
Yeah.
Do they take in consideration the size of the man?
No. No, this is because general could, numbers.
Okay, I'm just
we'll
saying.
We'll get to that. Yep. And women, reminder, is 4 or more in a sitting or 8 or more per week.
Sitting or day? I mean, I guess it could be the same thing.
In a sitting, it says in a day. If you're doing the semantics like that,
you probably
have an issue.
Sure.
You know, if you're going to sit here and argue with me and say, well, I had 4 over 24 hours, that's fine. I never even felt intoxicated. Okay, well, if you're arguing with me about the semantics, you know, take that into consideration.
Yeah.
I do love your piece of advice, though. If you're kind of on the fence and you don't know, and maybe it's not because you just don't know, and it's not that you can't quit, but you're like, do I really have a problem? Do I really have to quit? Can I still drink once in a while? If you're on the fence, that's okay. That doesn't necessarily mean, oh my gosh, you have an alcohol use disorder. Right. What it means is, you know, you're thinking positively about your health and go to an AA meeting,
right?
You know, and just sit and listen. And you can even say, I don't know. You know, I think I might drink too much, but maybe I don't. Maybe I don't think I do, but people may be concerned, but I don't know. I don't think it's more than average. I just kind of want to listen and learn. And you can go to meetings.
Well, there's the thing is that some are open and some are closed. You can look into that.
Explain that if someone's questioning.
So if you're questioning whether or not you should or can go and you haven't identified as alcoholic, they either identify them as open or closed, and the open ones are for anybody, and you can be a family member, you can be somebody that is questioning. You can't drink in there, obviously, but you know the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking, and so you don't even have to have that.
An open meeting would be a good one to go to if you're kind of questioning.
Yeah.
That being said, a person who has alcohol use disorder, obviously they can go to open meetings as well. And
right.
It's run like a typical meeting. It's just there's more people available to go to that meeting.
We did that
episode on AA.
Yeah.
A few.
And we should do another one.
We will. I think we actually will start to go through maybe more details on the steps. I really just want to spend time on steps 4 and 5. Okay. But let's go back. Let's go back to this. So, you know, people will have questions over, you know, the alcohol breakdown or when does alcohol really impact our system or how come sometimes I drink this or sometimes I drink this. I've heard a patient say, well, I quit drinking, and they meant that they quit the hard alcohol.
Yeah.
I only drink beer now.
How much?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's this misconception, and I think I mentioned it last time, as did you, is that vodka tends to be, if people drink vodka every once in a while, I'm not saying vodka gives you a diagnosis of an alcohol use disorder, but what I notice is that people I am admitting, a vast majority, their drink of choice has somehow evolved from wine or beer to something else in between, and they end up vodka. It's just an anecdotal observation.
And I don't want anybody to feel shamed. I mean, I have family members that drink a couple drinks at dinner or they have evening beverage time. And I don't, they don't have to feel shame.
Right.
That's not what we're doing here.
No.
We're not pointing out that if you have a couple of drinks every night, if you can stop, if that's not like something that you start shaking or, you know, have anxiety about because you aren't going to have them, it's not a shameful thing.
Right.
It's if it overtakes your life, that's it.
Right. This is just education. Yeah. And, it's just something to think about. And I think sometimes people are afraid to go to that AA meeting or afraid to even ask those questions because they don't want that label.
Right.
And again, one in three people in the United States as an adult will qualify an alcohol use disorder sometime in their life. That does not mean every single one of them even gets diagnosed, right, or every single one of them goes to treatment. Alcohol is one that a lot of people can... kind of like cigarette smoking.
Yeah, they can quit.
They can quit on their own.
And that, you know, and go to your point about people don't want that label. I always said, as a teacher, I would rather be seen coming out of a bar by my students' parents than seen coming out of an AA meeting. Does that seem just absurd?
Right.
But it's true.
Right.
Because if you come out of an AA meeting, then you appear to be out of control.
Right.
But it's really the opposite.
Exactly.
It's the opposite.
Exactly.
So I love I'm proud to say that now. But
okay, so what is a drink? I should probably go to this before I start talking about metabolism. So what is a drink? You know, there's all sorts of funny glasses you can buy. Like, I have one that I got as a gift that has more dust on it that I would, it's just a funny thing. It's literally shaped like a wine bottle, but it has a glass on the top. You can fit a whole bottle of wine in there.
That's not one drink.
That's right. But so one drink, it totally varies. And so one beer is one drink if it's a like 12-ounce can of beer, which has got the roughly 5% alcohol content. If you're doing malt liquor, like a Mike's Hard Lemonade or something, we're not advertising, or you're doing like a...
that's how much
craft it's like beer,
7%.
8 to 9 ounces of a 7% roughly. So yes, 7% alcohol content in your beer is an 8 to 9 ounces is one serving. So,
and that, and again, that can be like a malt beverage or like even like the, what do they call those? The hard kind of beers that, like Natty Ice.
Yes.
Used to
all the time. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah. If it has the word ice in it, it's got a higher content. Yeah, I learned that in college.
And they have that on the beverage or on the container. It says what they are.
But if you go to the liquor store and you buy a 12 pack of an IPA, those are 12 ounce cans, but each can is actually more than one serving.
Right.
If it's an IPA.
Because an IPA is a...
typically has a higher alcohol content.
Or like a dark beer, like a, like a Guinness.
So again, I always... my way of questioning patients, because this wasn't a thing for a long time because beer meant beer. Craft beer didn't exist when I was in college. I mean, that's weird. I'm not even that old. But I always ask patients, are you drinking real beer or water beer? It's kind of just a joke just to ease the whatever. But it does change how much you're drinking.
Yeah, new beer versus old beer, really.
Okay, so 5 ounces of table wine. This is like your typical... red wine, white wine, your, you know, Chardonnay, your Cabernet. So a 5 ounce glass of wine is one serving, and that's about 12% alcohol.
Going off the ounce things.
Yeah. So glass of wine, 5 ounces.
And our
do you want to know what, look, wine glasses, especially red wine glasses, those things are huge. Right. So if you go to a restaurant, they typically pour one serving. Because it's
cost effective.
It's cost effective, but they typically pour one serving.
And
so
it looks
compare
like not much.
What is in your glass at the restaurant versus what's in your glass at home.
And there's really no, I mean, if you have a can of beer, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. If you're pouring a glass of wine, whatever it is, you're not measuring this out.
Right.
You know, you don't have a little measuring cup and say this is 8 ounces. You know, it's a guess.
Right.
And if you're pouring a full, you know, big glass of wine and saying I only had 2 glasses of wine, well, that might have been a bottle.
So it changes. It changes again depending on the other things. So like your malt liquors, your sherries. Sorry, I'm looking at one thing really quickly. One bottle of wine, a typical bottle of wine is 750 mils, so it's 5 glasses of wine. So if you're not getting 5 glasses of wine out of your bottle,
25 ounces.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So five glasses of wine in your average 750-ml bottle. A lot of people think those are liters, but they're not. They're 750-ml. So pay attention. How many glasses of wine are you getting out of that bottle? People say, I have a bottle of wine at night. Okay, you just drank five servings. Five. So that's too much. Okay, if you are drinking sherry or port, that kind of fortified wine, they're about 17% alcohol, so it's 3 to 4 ounces is one serving.
Which is not much.
Not much. That's why at a restaurant, if you get like an after-dinner drink, that's usually what it is. It's a smaller glass.
So I'm not a wine drinker, so it's hard for me to understand the difference. Will those always be red then, like the heavy?
You know, the sherry and port, yes, are both red, and they're both heavy. Like, you drink it, it's a thicker.
Yeah, right. It's like blood.
It's so gross. I don't know if there are non-red versions. They're usually really, really, really dark red. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like these. They have like a weird, overly sweet taste. Okay, now if we're talking like a cordial liqueur. So
what is that?
I don't even know.
A cordial liqueur.
I don't even know one off the top of my head. Limoncello. That's a big common one. It's like the tall, skinny bottle. It's... Okay, if you know what this is, okay, so you'll know what this is. It has about 24% alcohol in it, so it's like 2 to 3 ounces is one serving of that.
I'm trying to think, is it like schnapps?
No, okay. No. Okay, now if we're talking like brandy or cognac, so it's about 40% alcohol by volume, which is a single jigger or shot, which is about 1.5 ounces. Yeah. Or a highball. Okay. Highball, and then, well, it's the same thing because a shot of like vodka or an 80 proof alcohol, which is vodka, is one shot is one serving, 1.5 ounces. Now, if we're talking 99 bananas, which is 99 proof, you better back off to just 1 ounce.
Right.
So anyway.
If it's 40%. I mean, it's all listed on the bottle.
And if you don't know, okay, if the bottle says it's 80 proof, the percentage is half of the number.
Right. So 80 proof, you said 80% with vodka, but it's 80 proof.
That's what I meant. Yeah. 80 proof, 40%. Yeah. Yes.
And that's typical. You know, in any whiskey, most of them are going to be 80 proof.
Right.
From my drinking days,
that's what it is.
And rum and all that, you know, those common ones when you go to a bar and you're drinking rum and Cokes. Right.
People say they're drinking a handle a day, that's a 1.75 liters.
Right.
That is a whole bunch of
servings. We'd have to get the calculator.
I'm not doing that math right now.
Because that's a ton. And
1,750 mils.
And that's what I ended my drinking
career
at.
And divided by like 25 or 30, because that's how many ounces.
Right.
Okay.
You got to put some work in to get that much done.
Right.
But, you know, the thing about this is that when we're in control of that own, the own serving size, we're not taking this into consideration. And if you watch somebody pour a drink at a bar, I mean, these bartenders get trained and they know by eye what it is. Sometimes you'll see one poured into a little shot thing, but there's a lot that can be done to get you to buy more liquor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want you to drink. So
that's why they have salty snacks on the counter, yeah, because salty makes you thirsty.
But they want you to get intoxicated so you stay longer. So, you know, they'll maybe put 3 ounces in your drink.
Glass number one. Yeah. And then they gradually water it down.
So you don't really know how much.
Right.
So now we'll get to the how it affects you and how long it's going to take, because somebody might be drinking those first few drinks really fast.
Correct.
They don't know how quickly it's going. It may not affect them until an hour later, and they don't know how drunk they are.
Correct. So peak effect is roughly, 30 to 90 minutes. So there's a lot of factors.
That's a window.
It's a big window because there's a lot of factors, which I'll get to. The average peak effect is in 45 minutes to an hour. From the first drink. And so people who are having a really bad day and go home and drink down like 5 shots, you're going to feel really not great in an hour.
But to be clear, like one shot in 45 minutes, you're not going to, some people will.
And then I'll explain what makes you feel it sooner.
Because you think it would be compound on one on top of the other. And
we'll get to that too. Alcohol is metabolized very differently, so we'll get to that. Okay, if you are fasting, meaning you haven't eaten, and you drink, you're going to start feeling effects within 30 minutes.
On an empty stomach. That's why people that are alcoholic a lot of times don't eat.
Right. Exactly. that's the whole malnourishment thing.
Right.
And patients will say, I get all my calories from that. Okay. Right. Even eating after you drink helps slow that down. I mean, but it's different. Like if you're eating on a, if you're drinking on a full stomach, or if you're drinking while you're eating, or if you're drinking, eating right after, after drinking, it all slows it down about the same.
It does.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yes. Cause I looked that up in a couple different places. I was like, that's a little bit different. And, okay. Vodka. So now here's, we're going to differentiate the types. Vodka, the impacts will happen roughly at 36 minutes plus or minus 10 minutes. So vodka hits you faster. Wine hits you about 54 minutes plus or minus 14. Beer, about 62 minutes plus or minus 23. I mean, we're getting into ranges here. If it's carbonated, it's shorter onset. If it's hot out and you're outside, it's shorter onset. If you are standing, it's shorter onset. If it's shorter carbonated, onset
means
it hits you faster.
Okay.
Because
you said beer is 64 minutes,
but beer is slower.
Right, but that's carbonated, isn't it?
Yes, but carbonated itself is shorter than like flat something.
Okay.
These are just numbers that, you know, somebody studied. So the way to get inebriated the fastest is to be fasting on a really hot day out on the boat, drinking some carbonated mixed drink with vodka and it's cold.
This is not a suggestion.
No, but this I'm just telling you the difference versus you're having Thanksgiving at home, you're sitting around and you're having your flat red wine and you're eating like way too much and you're sitting and doing all that. And it's a red wine, so it's room temperature. It's not cold. That'll hit slower. Yeah. Okay.
So okay, go ahead. I had a question. It's gone, so it'll pop up probably after we're done.
Okay, here's the thing about alcohol, though. And for science geeks, I'm going to say it out loud just because it's interesting. It's zero order kinetics versus most things in the world, medication-wise or drug-wise, are first order kinetics. All that means is alcohol is eliminated at a very set rate. So, and I used to think this in college, I can have about a drink an hour and I'm staying under the legal limit. Okay, the reality is as a woman, it's about a drink every hour and a half and you're going to stay not
inebriated?
Well, you'll have the effects, but you're going to you're going to lose all your faculties.
Control.
Thank you. Not that you should go drive, but a woman is going to, you know, break down alcohol or one drink every about hour and a half. A guy, it's a little bit faster, closer to that hour. So regardless, if I pound five vodkas right now, it's going to still take five-ish, seven-ish hours for all that vodka to leave my system.
Right.
Even though I just did five right now. So that's the thing about alcohol. It metabolizes at the same rate, no matter how much you have on board.
And with that said, this is why people will say when they took their last drink and they got pulled over 5 minutes after and they blew 0.2 and then they blew again at the police station and they blew 0.29.
Right.
It's because you're still adding on.
It's still impacting one system.
And so waiting, you know, a lot of people are like, I'll wait 45 minutes until I go drive. That's not, because now you're driving at your peak.
You're right. You're driving at your peak. And so there's a lot in there. So just remember, alcohol breaks itself down at a regular same rate. And we'll talk about tolerance here in a second. Actually, I'll talk about tolerance now because it's the perfect time. Tolerance is really, really complicated. You know, some of it's genetic. So I'm Irish, so I'm going to use that as the stereotype, is the, you know, the Irish are more, have higher tolerances just genetically, is kind of the old adage. My grandpa used to say that, so that's why I'm using it. But he was like darn near 100% Irish. And he also had an alcohol use disorder and quit drinking before I was born. So there you go. So in college, this is a really cool thing to have a high tolerance. It's not really, but different genetics do have different tolerances, just baseline. Now, how tolerance builds over time, because people will say, I stopped drinking, and then, you know, a classic, someone gets pregnant, they don't drink for the whole 9 months or, you know, a year after because of breastfeeding or whatever, And then they have a drink and they're like, whoa, I lost all my tolerance. I'm a cheap date. You'll hear those comments. Some of that has to do with the enzymes. So your body, there's two main enzymes in your body that break down alcohol. And that's where genetics impacts, is how those enzymes break down. I don't know if we really need to go through the names of them. Either way, some think there's a different types of tolerance. I'm sorry. I'm going to jump all over the place. There's metabolic tolerance, and this is what I'm talking about, is that the body does adjust, and the body does try to speed up the metabolism of alcohol over time. So I said it breaks down the same amount at a set rate, no matter what. But people who drink a ton, their body is like trying to get that toxin out of there. And so it does try to speed up that breakdown. It still only breaks it down at a certain set rate, an hour, but the metabolism of the alcohol is probably faster.
Well, it's like a computer knowing a program. Right. It's already programmed to that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But the one other thing is that I look at tolerance, some people think of tolerance more as how you can handle it, like how you're presenting yourself.
Perfect.
And that is like, you'll have people that they'll be at a 0.35 and they will handle themselves better than some people that are at a 0.8.
Perfect. I'm glad you said that. No, that was a great segue, but I do want to just quickly, for the nerdy people who want me to tell you, it's alcohol dehydrogenase is the first step in breaking down alcohol, and then the second one is aldehyde dehydrogenase, just in case there's people out there who really want to know that. And 90% of alcohol is metabolized in your liver. I'm going to tell you something else later about that. Okay, so you're talking about what we call learned or functional tolerance, and this is people who drink. Eventually, it's kind of like riding a bike. You just know how to do it after doing it for a long time. So if you're drinking and you're always, this is the best example, every day after work, you go to the bar with your coworkers or whatever, not saying to do this, but you go to the bar and then you drive home. It's you don't even know what you're doing anymore. Your body just, it's kind of like you don't realize how you got there. Like you don't even have to really overly think about it. So if you always go to the same bar and you always drive home, you're going to be actually pretty good at that over time. Again, this is not a recommendation or promotion. Now let's say it's somebody celebrating something and they say, let's go to a different bar after work. And you drink the exact same amount you would have at bar A, but now you're at bar B, different area, and you're going to drive home. Your driving is not going to be as good. You are more at risk of getting pulled over from bar B than you are bar A, even with the exact same alcohol intake, because that learned behavior isn't there.
Yeah.
So that is one thing. So if you are one of those people, and this is harm reduction here, again, not a promotion, and you go to a different place than you're not normally go to, please drink less or eat more or just delay it.
Or just make plans ahead.
Right. Make plans to not drive.
They have ride shares. The stuff that's out there now is supposed to be able to limit the amount of drunk drivers out there. But
okay. And now what you were talking about in a little bit more detail is people who drink more have more tolerance to different activities. One is your normal speech. So two people could drink the exact same amount. Let's say they had the exact same metabolism, like identical twins. Let's do that. Identical twins. One drinks, one doesn't. And they both have like two drinks. The one who doesn't drink is going to slur their speech. They're going to kind of be walking funny. And the one who drinks, you would never know they drank. Right. So those are things that eventually over time, there's this really cool graph. The one thing that you don't build tolerance to, though, is violence. Isn't that weird?
Hmm.
So,
or anger.
Your anger. So people are saying, I'm an angry drunk and I'm at the bar and I get in fights when I'm drinking. Well, really, even if you would have had one drink, your risk of that is still there. So the tolerance to overreacting or violence or anger or outburst, there isn't a tolerance to that. Versus the euphoria, versus the ability to walk in a straight line, versus the ability to have a conversation.
That increases with the amount of.
Yeah, you get better at those things.
Yeah.
Takes more to get to the sloppy, if you will. But the violence, there you don't build a tolerance to that. Isn't that interesting?
Fascinating.
Okay, so we should be wrapping up here shortly.
The thing about this is one of the things I'm thinking about is when people are, again, this is, if you're interested in whether or not you are or a family member is, this is great information to take in. And also
share this because they might need to hear these right. details.
And there's so many, because again, it's such a socially acceptable
activity.
And you know, it's a drug. It's mm-hmm. a drug. And when we talked about the ounces of beer, alcohol is alcohol. Doesn't matter what it's in.
Mm-hmm.
A one size shot of vodka is the same as one beer. It's not different. It's right. alcohol.
Right. It's the volume changes. So people typically don't drink as much beer as they do vodka.
Because it's
in a smaller quantity. Right.
You know, you get full.
Right. So that's where people get confused. But you are totally right. Alcohol is alcohol is alcohol.
Right. So okay, just saying I only drink beer doesn't mean you don't drink alcohol. You still drink alcohol.
Okay, really a couple things I do want to put into this episode because they're pertinent. And we're talking about blood alcohol level. So you get pulled over and you blow a 0.05. What does that actually look like? A person who's at a 0.05, which is technically under the legal limit, has that euphoria, they're more talkative, they're more relaxed, happiness, all the positive things you would think of.
The effects that are good.
Right. The effects that are good that you do build tolerance to, by the way, though, over time. So over time, it does take more to get to that. But your blood alcohol is still there. It's still the same whether you have those positive effects or not. It just takes longer to get to what you want. That's why people can have a 0.3 and you never know it.
Right.
A 0.1, so technically over the legal limit, they changed that when I was a kid in Minnesota. Now it's 0.08. 0.1, you'll have more central nervous system depression, and meaning your body just starts to slow down a little bit, like your normal reaction time, which is why they changed it. You have more stress reduction, though. So some of the reasons people drink is to have that anxiety relief. Especially after like a hard day at work, you hear that takes about getting to that 0.1. You get more sleepy. You might have some nausea. You might have some vomiting. You might have some impaired memory. You will have some motor impacts, sensory function. So again, this is a person who doesn't have tolerance. That's what's happening at 0.1. If you're greater than 0.14, so let's just say the 0.2 range. You start getting decreased blood flow to your brain, much more slurred speech. You might have double or blurry vision.
You're drunk.
0.3, confusion. You might have the numbness. You might have some dizziness. This is where blackouts, loss of consciousness. You just like pass out. That's about a 0.3. 0.4. Now you're like starting to get some alcohol toxicity happening even more. You're very drunk. You're very inebriated.
Alcohol poisoning.
Possible death happens at that 0.4 level. 0.5, like literally you're unconscious. You're in a coma. You're dead.
You're not safe.
This all being said, most breathalyzers stop at like a 0.5. Okay. Let me tell you how many people I have seen in the last 5 months who blow over a 0.5, and we don't even know. We check them an hour later, they're still at a 0.5. So I have seen people in front. Now, those people don't look good. They do not. They're not sitting talking to me normally. But 0.3, 0.35, you know how many people I have seen at that level? And I would not know it. And they're shocked. Right. Like, because they don't feel drunk.
Right.
That defines tolerance. And that's sometimes a big wake-up call.
Yeah.
Is like, wow, like they didn't know it.
That goes to the whole tolerance thing.
Yes.
That's a good indication. Now, we don't all have the luxury of having a breathalyzer on us at all times. But, you know, I think it comes down to people probably know. And if they're checking into treatment, they probably shouldn't be surprised at how high the BAC is, at how they feel, unless they've been regularly tested.
Yeah. But that's huge because those negative impacts on the brain are happening even though you have tolerance.
Exactly, and that's what we'll get into, I think, in the next episode. Yes, the long-term impacts. I also want to talk about the DUI things and why somebody might have more DUIs because they don't even realize how inebriated or how much their BAC is, and they're driving around, they feel fine. Right. There's their sixth DUI, and they're alcoholic.
Right.
You know, so.
Okay, one just kind of fun fact. I was at work, and a bunch of the guys, now they're not intoxicated. They're all totally sober from everything at this point. They all go play basketball, and they're struggling because most of them haven't been physically active. And I kind of half jokingly, but half serious said, like, did the gym smell like a bar when you were done? And that's a real thing, because 5 to 10% of alcohol, like 90% is broken down by your liver and, you know, normal metabolism, but 5 to 10% actually is eliminated from your body unchanged in your urine, in your breath, thus breathalyzers, and sweat. So actually, when people sweat and they smell like alcohol, I mean, technically you could lick them and you're still going to get alcohol. I'm not saying to do it. But so it's actually a thing that people sweat out alcohol.
Literally,
and
just
it's
had
legitimately alcohol is coming out in their sweat. Not, I'm just, isn't that well, just and, like a fun fact?
And this is, you know, when you mentioned that, I think about when I would sweat coming off of a meth bender. I would smell way different, and it would smell like meth. You could tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming out your pores. Mm-hmm. And that can be with other drugs too. So just a quick mention, we will do a celebrity highlight when we wrap up this Alcohol 101 four-part series whatever
totally
it's going to be.
I didn't think about that last time.
Because it does take a little time, and we want to just try and get these through in different little chunks.
Snippets.
So, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the great response that we've had lately. We've had some really increased numbers, and we want to just keep that up, because ultimately this podcast is to help. We want to help people in whatever way we can. And
if that means even reaching out, emailing us, asking questions, asking for help, asking for recommendations, please do so.
And you don't even need to ask us. Find somebody in your area. Find somebody that you know is in recovery. We all have seen the stats about how many people. I mean, everybody probably at this point has somebody that they know that's dealing with something like an addiction or in recovery. So
Right. Reach
out. That's the biggest thing. And again, if you're questioning whether or not you're an alcoholic and you're drinking a case of beer a day, don't stop and take my theory of just trying to stop.
Seek medical help first, but go to a meeting and see. There's the app on the App Store. If you search Alcoholics Anonymous or AA, the app looks like a chair. So it shows you from your location, all the meetings, how far away they are from you, and what's all upcoming. So,
and you can click on them and you can see whether it's open or closed.
Right. All right.
All right.
So thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Working together, we can move addiction to recovery.
If you would be so kind, please go to wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating, possibly a comment, but for sure click to follow us so you never miss an episode. Most importantly, don't forget to share our episode with a friend.
And as always, if you would like to ask us a question, have a topic recommendation, or would even want to be a guest on our show, email us at addiction2recoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's addiction2recoverypodcast@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at A2RPodcast or on Facebook or Instagram at addiction2recoverypodcast.